Welcome to Heather Bray 1854 Talks, a podcast that began with the restoration of a Grand Victorian mansion in Caulfield, Melbourne, Australia, and a podcast that now explores heritage, history, architecture, art, and design. In this episode, we'll welcome our special guest, Edwina Bartholomew, reporter and presenter on Australia's number one breakfast show, Sunrise, who wears many hats as a working mum, wife, and along with her husband, Neil, now taking on the restoration journey of their own project, Saltash Farm. I'm Anne Baker, joined today by my wonderful co-host, Julie Federa. Hello.
Hello. And we've had Edwina and I have walked through Heather Bray today, and what was apparent from that is that we are both women who are passionate about heritage and restoration.
Well, welcome, Edwina. It's such a pleasure to have you join us today for our podcast. We know our listeners would be full of questions about why you're our guest today, but firstly, we want to know, how do you fit everything into your busy schedule?
Well, firstly, thank you for having me. And secondly, we have just come from Heather Bray and done the most amazing tour with Julie, and I'm so full of ideas and inspiration and just had the most amazing time looking into your world. How do I juggle it all? I do not know. For your listeners that don't know, I work for Sunrise, a breakfast show on Channel 7, which sees me get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go to work. And so I have two young kids who stay at home. We have a nanny that really is helpful because my husband is living at our renovation, which is 3 hours away in the country, which is what brings me here. It's just, I guess, all smoke and mirrors. I mean, it looks very organized and like I'm on top of it all, and I'm not. I have a very messy car, a very messy room. But strangely enough, I think getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning when no one else is awake actually gives you a few hours to get a few things done and to process ideas and answer emails and think about things. And I don't know, it just gives you more hours in the day if you get up earlier. And so I get more done.
Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, and thank you for coming to Heather Bray. It's been so lovely walking through and talking to a fellow restorer. I saw your Saltash Farm. I've obviously followed you for most of your career, probably, Edwina. Your beautiful smile on television and your incredible, journalistic ability. But Saltash Farm looks amazing. Tell us a little bit more about what you're doing there.
It's a little fish out of water, Julie. You know, as you mentioned, I've been a journalist for 20 years, but through that time have always had this deep appreciation of history, both generally, but more specifically recently, houses. So we, 7 years ago, bought an old sandstone cottage in the country out near Mudgee in New South Wales, and we renovated that and we've turned it into an accommodation business.
And what's that called?
That's called Warramba.
And with Warramba.
Yeah, it's in the beautiful Kapiti Valley, which is this huge canyon. It's just spectacular. So that kicked off a love of renovation for my husband and I, and also of running a business collaboratively. And then we bought a house in Sydney that dated back to the 1880s and started the process of renovating that. Absolutely loved that.
So just deep dive straight in.
Straight in. We needed a bigger house and we chose an old one, and knowing that it had heritage restrictions attached to it, which, you know, as you know, is good and bad, and turned that into a family home. But to be honest, as mortgage rates went up and up and up and up and up, and our childcare costs went up and up and up and up, we just thought, you know what, let's sell it. And at the same time, we found this amazing building in the country we felt we could turn into a business. So instead of wasting all this money on our mortgage, we decided to spend that money and invest it in a business that we could grow. So that was the genesis of the idea. It was all very quick.
And you've travelled quite a lot through country Victoria, haven't you, through your work and
so
private.
So on Sunrise for many years I did the weather, and funnily enough, that's about 10% weather and 90% travel, that job. And it took me to, honestly, I feel like every single country town in this country. Lots of travel across Victoria particularly, which I just loved because I think Victoria has something so special in all of the tiny towns that sit so close to Melbourne actually but have such beautiful history.
Because it had the gold rush,
Bendigo, Ballarat, those beautiful buildings, that wonderful history. In New South Wales you get that too, but not as common. But when you drive through this little tiny town of Carcor where we found this guest house, it is genuinely like going back in time. They call it the town that time forgot because at one point they built a road around it so people weren't going through it anymore, which spelled the death of many towns for a long time. But now
– when they brought the freeways. That's
when they brought the freeways in. But now it means that these towns – progress almost skipped over them in many senses. And so this town in particular, it's all protected. So the whole town and all the facades and all the beautiful buildings all fall under a heritage protection. So it has become a very rare example of an old town in New South Wales. And that smack bang in the middle of that is Saltash Farm.
And what's the population in Carcor?
The population is about 300 or sort of even less, 300 plus one, which is my husband who's moved out there. So that was a big choice for us. He's been a bit unwell with chronic fatigue, doesn't love being in the city, to be honest, because he's from the country, comes from Lithgow originally, which is near there. So we made the call that he and the dog would move out to Carcor and begin this process, and I would stay in the city with the kids and we'd go back and forth, which when you talk about Anne before, the juggle of it all, that's why we had a nanny move in with us at the time. So that was, you know, a huge privilege to be able to do that, and honestly the only way we could do that.
It's brave. It's brave of both of you.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's brave and it's I think at this point the reality of that sacrifice is just starting to kick in. But, you know, we know that we're building something for our family.
There's and a that's goal the, that you're the, hitting.
There's a legacy.
Goal, a legacy, and that is the whole point.
And we're experiencing that as well with Heather Bray. I mean, we're trying to keep two households running and trying to fund this big project while the mortgages are huge. We're not just have the money tree out in the backyard where we're funding all of this. And you know, just the logistics behind it all. So you're right. There is the reality that kicks in.
I think it's also, it's our money, right? Like we're putting a lot on the line to make this work.
Yeah.
And I was speaking to someone the other day who was full of praise and enthusiasm. And she said, it's just going to be fantastic. And I said, oh, I hope so. And she goes, no. Not I hope so. It will be. You know what? I have great conviction and belief that it will be amazing when we're done.
Where is home for you right now then?
Because
that sounds like a lot of – and I think also you come from Adelaide. You're born in Adelaide.
Born in South Australia, Australia. But my family's in Sydney now.
Right.
I mean, home is a movable feast, really. So we have a house in Sydney that we rent.
Yeah.
We have the project in Carcor, and we have the farm that we run as an accommodation business. So it's just a lot of scheduling, really.
Yeah.
So we have basically the whole year mapped out. We set aside weekends that we spend together at the farm. We set aside weekends where we're at Carcor, and then we have time in the city too. So it's just a logistical, I want to say nightmare, but it's
Where's not actually your heart too hard. Where does your heart lie?
Oh, I think in many ways the farm, because it's finished.
Yeah.
And we go
you
there.
Can relax.
Yeah, we can relax.
Represents enjoy your vision time together at the moment, whereas Saltash is at the genesis stage.
That's very much at the beginning. You spoke about rebirth today at Heather Bray. That's very much the beginning of the rebirthing process. It feels like a long labour. but when we go to the farm, we can see what we have created together as a couple and now a family.
Beautiful.
And that's the end goal. I know you're interviewing me, but I'd love to ask you, because I came to you after reading about your story in the design files, and what I loved about it was that you and Vince were doing it together. So I'm just so curious as to how that works, because you must have to find your own camps when it comes to who's making what decision or who's executing what work.
Absolutely, especially as we're both A-types. So, and I bet you guys are too.
I don't know. I think Neil would argue that I'm the A type and he's coming along for the ride sometimes.
Well, that scheduling sounds like an A type.
So that is me.
But we're both A types. And so if we don't have our own camps, we fight. So with us, I find the properties. I'm very passionate. I trawl and I look for property and I go through. I love going through old property anyway. It's just I feel like I'm at home there. Must be a... I come from another, I'm reincarnated.
Another
from,
era.
So yeah, that's right. But so I find the properties, I boil it down to a short list and then I bring him through. We secured Heather Bray on a whim. We were looking for a downsizer actually.
And you got that wrong.
Yeah, we did get that wrong, but feels right now. We ended up buying the home and thinking this could be a really nice generational home for our family. And, you know, that's another story, but talking through the different camps, Vince is very practical. He can fix anything. He was the kid whose mother, his mother gave him radios as a child to keep him occupied and he'd pull them apart and put them back together. And then when we went to uni together, and we've been together 34 years, everyone would bring their little laptops, you know, the little 320s that took 20 minutes to load up. They'd bring them to him to fix them and he just has that mechanical mind. He understands how to do that stuff. Me, not so much. So that's his thing. That's his jam. And you would have seen that today walking through Heather Bray. He was, you know, whittling away and painting and doing all sorts
in
of
his
things.
Element.
Yeah. And he's really good at it. You know, for me, I run around and I source products and I put together the interiors and the, you know, the functional aspects of the home, things like light switches and things like that. And he does all the tech.
Yeah, wow.
So we don't really tread on each other's feet. I think that's really important. But now that we're at the stage where all the decorative elements are starting to go in, he does tend to second guess some of them. Mm. For example, you saw that bathroom, which is painted out in green. He's freaking out over that at the moment, saying, it's too dark, I can't go in there. But my vision in my head is to layer that room up, and he doesn't quite understand that vision. That can create some conflict at times. We do. We stand in different camps. So I think I would highly recommend you do the same.
I think that helps. And to Neil's credit, I mean, he's such a gracious man, and I think he often will just let me kind of run with an idea. And I think that's what I've loved so much about this process so far, because we're probably a year behind where you guys are now in terms of just finalizing all those decisions that will then make up the build. And so up until this point, that's really been a conversation between myself, our amazing architect Felicity from Studio Estetta, and we found the most amazing builder too, who's local and has a real love of heritage as well and grew up in Kharkhul, which
I love
is so
that.
Rare.
I saw that on your Instagram page.
Which is fantastic. So Aaron's been a wonderful resource as well. And we're also lucky in our town that the council has its own heritage advisor, David Scobie, who's actually been so helpful to us from the very beginning, because in as well as the original heritage guest house, which dates back to around the 1880s, this current building, although there was an inn on the site back to the 1850s.
That's really early.
Yeah, it's really early. And this beautiful convict built stone stables, which is next door, dating back to the 1850s as well. So that's original and believed to be the oldest building in town. And so through that process, it's been really collaborative to get to this stage of submitting the plans, because I think it's really important in a town that size with so much history to really build something that is so respectful. And, you know, down to the choice of colours on the outside, they need to tie in with the town. That we are building some new structures at the back, which are accommodation and also a house that we can be in when we're there. And so it's important that all of that sort of fits into that story. You know, we're not building a contemporary addition to what is a historic house.
And did you have more freedom with your previous project with the farm?
With the farm, nothing at all.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
so this is new for you, all of this.
We had an element of it in our build in Sydney. So like many people who would have renovated a heritage house, had to get a heritage report, you know, do some sort of heritage, you know, we respected heritage but didn't have to necessarily adhere to all of the guidelines. Whereas here it's a different kettle of fish because we're building the whole town is heritage.
And the eyeballs of the town.
The eyeballs of the town.
Over what you're working
and
on.
And understandably too, you know, like we wouldn't want to build something that doesn't respect that, you know, and we both have a respect for that, which is why we bought it in the first place. I think you'd be just knocking your head literally up against a wall if you built a if you bought a property like that and then just tried to do something insanely contemporary on the back or just kind of resent those guidelines. I mean, they're there for a reason, so that down the track in years to come, it also ages respectfully with the town. So so many things to take into account. But yeah, Neil and I, we haven't got to the stage yet where he comes into his own in the kind of project management stage of it. And he'll be sort of acting as an apprentice to our builder, Aaron. And it drives him nuts because I'll always turn up because obviously I haven't been there during the week and work's been done and progress has been made, and then I'll turn up and say, "Well, no, well, why did we do it that way? Or like, what on earth?" Or I'll pick out the one thing that is just slightly off kilter. And
we have the same dynamic.
Yeah, and it drives him mental. I remember when we did our farm renovation and we had to. We built a shed nearby because there was no shed, and it obviously is a farm, needs a shed. And I turned up and I said, "Well, it's not at right angles to the house. How did no one pick up that the footing for the shed isn't in line with the house?" And no one had noticed until I got there, and like that they had to redo it because it was just ever so slightly off kilter. And my dad's an engineer. And we joke in our family
so the engineering
about the calibrated eyeball and the builder of our house in Sydney, same thing. I'd walk in and go, "Oh, but it doesn't line up. Like it's not quite symmetrical." And he goes, "Man, you should be a builder." In that kind of tone that went like, "You shouldn't be a builder because this is really annoying.
Annoying. Now it's going to cause a lot more work.
Now
for me.
I have to redo it at my expense because it's wrong." So, but having said that, I think you end up, you know, that kind of finicky attention to detail is what
really
makes
important.
A project like this really project like this really sing.
I do copious amounts of research and I found this acanthus leaf as a sign of rebirth, and so we're using it throughout our home as a sign of our rebirth of Heather Bray. Just those tiny little details, you know, we've taken a cast iron panel from our balcony and used part of that to create what we're now calling the Heather Bray logo. You'll see it on some of our socials, but you'll also see that forming part of the patterns in our carpets and things as well.
With us, what we found is that when our heritage expert came through, he said, "Sadly, not much of this is original." So in the early 2000s, there was a renovation done by the previous owners, the Campbells, and they did a fantastic job. They did a lot of it themselves as well. They really absolutely adored and loved that building. But because it was done at that stage, it's good and bad because it was done of a time. But the benefit to us is that we can return it back to the original time.
Oh,
so now with our cornices, our architraves, our doorways, every detail can be correct to the period.
Do you have any pictures of the home? Oh, you do.
We have externals of the home, no internals.
Right.
So it was a pub.
Yeah, yeah.
So unlike Heather Bray, which is so ornate and gorgeous and beautiful, this was a country pub in a country town. So, which is good because it actually means that we can set the tone for the interiors. So it'll be historic, but a contemporary take.
I guess you could look at other. Are there any other pubs in the town, or any other buildings that were built by the same?
There are buildings built at the same time.
So you could probably take cues from those.
Absolutely.
In your interiors.
So, so there will be examples of, say, cornices and architraves that were original or are original that we can sort of build upon. There's an old sort of shed at the back which turns out to be – there was original laundry actually that's dating back to the 1920s. And we've actually just recently, which I can't wait for, have been invited up to the local nursing home for a cup of tea because many of the residents there were invited by Betty. And
Hi, Betty.
Hi, Betty. And they've lived in the town for all of that time. Mm. And there used to be two sisters that owned the property. And so many of the people there knew the sisters and know so much about the history of the house. So that will be wonderful to actually be able to speak to all the residents there about Karkor, about the house, about just life too, not necessarily the architecture, but what went on.
It's the storytelling, isn't it, that really draws you in, and it's that magic.
So where, just for the listeners, where is Karkor?
So Karkor is near Orange. So your listeners might know Orange is a great food and wine region.
Beautiful architecture
as well. Beautiful architecture there. Mm. So it's between Orange, Bathurst and another town called Cowra.
Okay.
So it sits sort of in the middle of those three, which is, again, why we thought it has potential as an accommodation business, because in New South Wales, that central west region is huge for tourism.
Yeah.
So it has the potential that you could base yourself in Karkor at the hotel, stay at Saltash Farm and then visit Orange and visit Bathurst and visit Cowra.
You might bring Karkor back to life.
We hope so in many ways.
And interestingly, I mean, we've spent time talking about how Julie and Vincent found Heather Bray. Really interested to know how you and Neil stumbled upon what is now or what will become Saltash Farm.
Well, I'd like to pretend that it was part of some grand plan, but it wasn't. We took a family holiday. So my daughter's four, Molly, and my son Tom is two. And we piled in the car and took a driving holiday through the Central West. And we pulled into Karkor, which I'd always wanted to visit. I went to uni nearby, but I'd never really sort of passed through there. And there's a beautiful homeware store there called Tomolly. Funnily enough, her kids are also called Tom and Molly. And we popped into the homeware store and we just potted around town. And then the pub was for sale. And we sort of thought to ourselves, well, wouldn't it be great, you know, if someone great bought the pub? And then a little bit later, I said to Neil, what if we bought the pub? But my husband doesn't drink. I don't drink that much either. And I, you know, go to bed at 8 o'clock. So I thought, not probably the best owners of a pub. And it had sold, which is fantastic because I've got a great owner there, Sean. But then we found this other place for sale there. And the benefit of this property, which was to become Saltash Farm, is there's not just the guest house, but there's 2 acres of vacant land out the back. Well, it's 2 acres in total. And then up above it is the old historic station as well. So it's in this beautiful kind of pocket of town that hadn't been built on yet. So there was great potential for that. So it was all very, very fast. We sort of discussed it over New Year's, same time actually that we found our farm, around that period of, you know, starting the new year and thinking about what's ahead. And Neil said to me, because I was so tired from working like a really busy summer period, I must have been having a whinge about that. And he said, well, you're living your dream, but I'm not living mine. And it was a real watershed moment for us where we had to reevaluate what we were doing. And in many ways, it's a project for Neil. No, he's the one who's made the sacrifice to move out to the country. He's the one who's going to have hands on the tools doing the work. So he is now living his dream. So we can all live our dream together.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, so that's sort of what happened. But it was a big call.
But that speaks a lot about the depth of your relationship, that you can be honest with each other and put those things on the table, because a lot of people hold that back and relationships fail.
Yeah.
So that's terrific.
And I think it does have to be honest in all senses of the word. You know, we have to be honest as parents, as a couple, as business partners as well. And those may not be the same conversations, because what works for the business may not work for the family. And so it's a lot of factors to weigh up in our decision-making process.
You know, it's interesting. It reminds me, I used to be the lawyer for Mercedes-Benz in Australia, and marketers like Anne sitting next to me used to hate seeing the lawyer come in, because I'd put the kibosh on everything.
We would call them dream killers.
Yeah. I used to wear different hats in the business. So when I walked into marketing, I used to put on this is my personal hat and this is my legal hat, you know. And I think what you're talking about is you do that in a relationship too, don't you?
Mm. Yeah. And ultimately for him, I think it's a lot harder for him than it is for me. You know, I'm in the city, I'm with the kids, life's breakneck speed, so we just get things done. Whereas he's by himself. I mean, he's got the dog, mates with him, but he's by himself in the country. And, you know what it's like with young kids. They're 2 and 4. They're not going to be 2 and 4 forever. So I think he's giving up more of those years than I am. But having said that, and I mentioned his health before, he has chronic fatigue. And so it made more sense for us, for him to have the week where he focused on his health, he focuses on the build, he does his other work. And then when we come together on the weekends, we know that that's quality time together as a family that's so much more meaningful than if we were still in the city and he was working an 8 to 6 job. He wouldn't see them anyway. Mm. We'd all be exhausted on the weekend. So it's unconventional, you know, it's a different type of family arrangement, but for us it really works.
We did a similar thing actually. When Sienna was born, well, when she was about 11 months old, Vince set up a business and he was building electrostatic speakers, and we reversed into a shell on the London Stock Exchange and set up a manufacturing plant in China. He was, for her first 2 years, he was gone 30 weeks the first year and 28 weeks the second year. And, you know, I think another parallel between us is it's the vision for your family that you're, you know, you make those sacrifices for. And well, it's exciting for you, you know, this path that you're on. So tell us a little bit more about your intentions for Saltash Farm.
So the intention is to build it into a luxury boutique hotel. So we had seen from our farm that we opened up as a sort of Airbnb initially, and now we run it through our own website.
I think I want to go and stay there.
You're very
welcome.
In fact,
I quite no. It might be a girls' weekend, perhaps.
So Anne and I call each other Dolly and Heather. Heather, I'm called Heather because everyone thinks I'm Heather from Heather Bray. And Dolly came off of a voice message that I sent her where it misinterpreted her name. So Dolly and Heather might come and visit you.
Well, we'd love to have Dolly and Heather at Ramber or Saltash any day of the year.
Thank
and I've already
you.
Invited myself to stay in the stables at Heather Bray. So the idea, so we had the farm, we could see the potential there of people, particularly post-COVID, wanting to explore their own backyard. Mm. And even as the cost of living crisis hit everyone and hit us too, we could still see that people who may not be able to afford to go overseas could still afford to travel domestically. That's tapered off ever so slightly, but by the time hopefully we open Saltash, that might, you know, the economy might have leveled out a little bit. And so we could see that potential there. And so the potential here is to turn it into a boutique accommodation business. So there will be the main house, which will have 5 rooms. And then there is the cabins at the back, which there'll be 3 different cabins. One is an accessible cabin. One is for 2 couples or a family, and the other can sleep a family or just a couple. And then we build a house there as well. And then we haven't.
Sorry, Edwina, the house, that will that be for your family to stay in, or will that be used as well as accommodation?
We will be able to stay there. But, you know, potentially down the track, if we decide to take on another project, I mean, that house could become a house for the manager of the hotel you know, like there's some flexibility there.
Yep.
But the intention is for us to have a base, because you spoke before, Julie, about having a home. I think as much as I enjoy the transience of being between places, I know for the kids it'd be a lot easier if we had somewhere that, you know, 2 places where they are moving between, as opposed to always packing a bag and moving on. So, yeah, we're conscious
leave
of creating a base there and leave a few things. And then we'll have weddings, some events. There's a sort of large tract of grass in the area we've left spare and vacant, so a marquee can go up at certain times of the year.
Yeah. I'm learning all about marquees at the moment. we're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Marquee props in the garden is a thing.
Oh, you mean props?
You need to actually put marquee anchor points into the garden to stop the garden from being damaged.
We'll talk about that. And I mean, even, you know, down to you need to have an underground power source that can come there.
That's right.
All those things. And which I love. I love that kind of really practical. Well, what we've spent so long talking about the septic, you know, like where does the septic go? And, the, you know, how do we do the storm drain and all that kind of practical level? So, yeah, the idea is accommodation, events, a base for us, and it's not huge. You know, it's not a big hotel development and we're not developers either. But, yeah, it should sleep about 25 to 30 people.
Wonderful. So what sort of state is the structure in now?
Okay. Previously, having done a heritage build, we had to basically, there was nothing supporting the second floor we discovered in that original house. Cracks through the walls and the plastering, a lot of structural issues we had to underpin. So we were very quick to check that as the first element of the build before we bought it.
And just on that as well, I presume it sounds like it was not in use when you purchased it, so it hadn't been used in a practical way for a very long time. Is that the case?
The opposite. They were running it as a guest house, yeah.
Oh, were they?
They were running as a guest house, so it was already a business. And so we actually bought it off a couple who were he was an engineer. So they'd done a lot of that pinning up of the veranda, structural aspects at the front, which, as you know, if you've done a heritage build, can be so expensive. So we had our friend who's a builder come through and look at all of that first. And we also have been very conscious in our plans of not changing too much structurally in the main building. So we're not knocking out walls, we're not reconfiguring too much, because we know that the minute you start to try and do that, then costs just rise exponentially and you find all sorts of, you know, fun things behind the walls that then cost a fortune to fix. So when we did the plans, we did move a bathroom, which will be a, you know, fairly minor expense, but most of that structural stuff had already been done. So each room already had a bathroom and plumbing. That was a big tick. The structural underpinning of the veranda had been done. We do need to replace the base of the veranda and also the roof. It was 80% there structurally, and 10% there aesthetically.
Mm. Hallelujah to the 80% structurally being there. But all that, I guess the other question that is raised in my mind, and we briefly touched on this before, where are you sourcing products?
It's 3 hours out of Sydney. Yeah. So we're sourcing a lot of products to come in from Sydney. Mm. But we've been so lucky to source a lot of tradespeople locally.
Yeah, that's
stonemasons, our builders local, as I mentioned, Aaron, and he has drawn a lot of skilled tradespeople there in the area. So we will bring in specialists from elsewhere, but unlike you guys at Hair of the Bray, where you needed to reconstruct all this intricate plastering, a lot of the products we can use can be off the shelf.
That's
made
great.
For heritage builds. And we have to be, you know, we don't
practical
have an endless bucket of money, so we need to make practical decisions.
Yep.
So ultimately, sure, you know, there could be things that we'd love to do that would provide the most amazing end result,
yep,
but we have to strike a balance.
Mm. Look, we've had to make similar decisions. You know, it's very that's the first time I've ever done a renovation where I've put it online and everyone has an opinion. And look, that's fine. But I had someone from America recently say, how could you use sheet plaster on those ceilings? You need to tear it down and do it again. Well, you know what? We can't afford to. You know, we had to cut costs in some areas. You know, we couldn't do lay them plaster, reinstate the certain ceilings that had already been pulled out. So we chose to use conventional plaster and then put beautiful embellishments on them. So that's right. We all have budgets that we have to work to.
I hope you went back to that person and said, thank you so much. If you'd like to come over and fund it for us, you're so welcome to contribute to the project.
No,
here are my bank account details. You can transfer the funds.
Oh, look, I welcome all comments on the page, and I understand where everyone comes from, but there is the practical realities of these builds. We chose to, you know, cut corners where we thought it wouldn't deleteriously impact the structure. And, you know, obviously we're all in that boat, aren't we, with our restorations.
And on that point, what we have found, just similar to you, is that there's this wonderful community of people who have a similar passion for historic homes and for our country's history, short as it may be. You know, there's still things that need to be preserved. So we've been blown away by the response to that. And secondly, the interest in those practical decisions. You know, well, what cornice do you choose? What architrave do you choose? Well, what window, you know, do you go with? Is it colonial? Is it Victorian? Those are the kinds of things that fascinate me, which is not every 40-year-old. But, you know, I love all that. So that's been fantastic. But also we need to ultimately build a hotel and a house that will be warm.
Yeah. That's right. The modern comforts.
Modern.
Yep. Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi, you know, and you have to strike a balance, which is what I loved seeing today at Heatherbrae, was the way that you've integrated the air conditioning, which, you know, it seems like such a silly thing, but ultimately you have to live there and be comfortable and give that house, because that's what you're giving it, a new chapter and a new life. You've got to give it another 100 years.
Mm. Well, it's interesting you should mention the air conditioning, because that kind of shows a full circle conversation I had with someone online as well. When I walked into the room one day and I put this online on our Instagram page, found Vince cutting the lineal vent hole in the press metal ceiling in the master suite, I had a couple of people saying, "You've ruined it. You've ruined it. You should speak to an architect. You've done the wrong thing." And I felt really wounded, because every decision I make is, I put so much research and heart into it. And I thought, oh my God, have I missed something here? And you know, someone said, you could have put it through the floor. Well, we couldn't in our particular situation. You know, you could have put it further towards the window. Well, we couldn't, you know, all of these things. But ultimately it was another follower that said to me, "Julie, you be sure that if the people in the 1800s had the technology that we have today to stay warm or cool, they would have put it in." Mm. And it kind of set me at ease, because I knew that I was minimizing the impact on the home with what I'd done. But we need to live in these homes, and I think that's a really important point. Restoration is very important, but also that they are livable and used is just as important.
But you told me something today that will stick with me too: trust your instincts. And that's what you've done. And you've also trust your research.
Mm.
And also, people are just seeing a hole in the ceiling right now, but when you're finished, it'll blend into the background.
You know, Julie, we spoke about this with Steve and Tim from Restoration Chateau, and they're, you know.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Tim.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Their deliberation over heating and cooling, which they still haven't.
Whole next level in a 58-room chateau. But, yeah, they still haven't come up with a solution. They've been there 6 years.
Wow.
And they have to go there and rug up, because it's damn cold.
Yeah.
So they're living the experience of how people lived back in the day, and they're trying to come up with a solution that's cost effective to heat this
and retains
structure.
The integrity,
correct,
of the chateau.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your timeline, Edwina?
Oh, what a great question.
In a perfect world,
we bought the home, the guest house, April last year, thereabouts.
Same as us.
Yeah. And the idea was that we'd start now, because it's a commercial property, the planning has taken us longer than we expected. So
more
there's
compliance.
A lot of accessibility restrictions or parameters, fire, you know, all sorts of things we sort of had thought about, but obviously not in that detail. So we're just about to resubmit our DA. It's happening as we speak over the Easter long weekend.
For people who don't know what that is.
A development application.
Yep.
So we've already submitted it, and then council came back with a few amendments, and they were very kind to us actually. They came back with about two or three things we should change, and I said, let's refer it to a town planner and some experts and see where we end up. We had to change about 30 things. So council actually did us a massive favour.
Yeah.
So now we've gone through 2 months of revising those plans, of resubmitting, and it's ended up by far a better project because of that process. Heritage changes, little things like, for example, there's this beautiful old bridge in town, and as you come over the bridge, there's a a new structure that's built onto the guest house, which is just a shed that we're turning into a workshop kitchen for chefs and for floristry or different classes. But it's got a flat facade, and so it really stands out in the streetscape because everything else has a veranda from that period. And the heritage advisor, David, said, well, why not build a veranda onto it? And initially I was like, well, I don't want to build a veranda. It's an unnecessary expense. But I stood there at the bridge and looked at it, and he was right. It was the first thing you noticed, and if we put a veranda on it, maybe you wouldn't notice it. So little tweaks like that. So now we can resubmit. I expect that process will take another few months for community consultation, which will be extensive. As I said, you know, there's a lot of vested interest and a lot of love for that town, both people who live there and externally. And then, I mean, I hope to start in June. And then.
So around the time we hope to move in.
Around the time you hope to move in. And I expect it'll take at least a year.
Yeah, that sounds
about right. At least a year. But we're not in any hurry.
So we'll book our flights for next year.
Yeah, so a few estimated maybe September next year to come and stay for spring, I think would be about
perfect.
Right.
That's perfection.
Yeah.
Will you have a website up in advance to do bookings?
So one of the reasons we started an Instagram account for the property is because what we lack in any physical building skills, unlike you and Vince, Julie, is, you know, marketing and storytelling is our bread and
you
butter.
You have a beautiful website.
You do.
So can you just share the website and your social media handles for everyone so they can go have a look?
Sure. So it's saltashfarm.com.au, and it's saltashfarm on Instagram as well, with a couple of underscores in the middle. Funny story about that, but we won't go into it. but... So people can go there. So we will build that over the next year.
Yep.
And then we'll build that social audience as well. And then ultimately we hope that those people who followed the renovation will then come and stay because we're building a business. And that's what we did with our farm too. We built an account for the process, and now many of those people who followed the process and I guess love the story now stay. And they come back each and every year with their families.
That's a wonderful loop.
It's a wonderful
loop.
Yeah, it is nice. And we have just been so blown away by that already. And we haven't even done anything. I mean, we haven't even actually started building. So we have about 37,000 followers. And I'd like to think and hope that actually when we start doing some, you know, renovation work and there's actually something to watch and something to follow, then that will grow as well. But we've just making little videos, which we made one today at Heather Bray, and people just love it. Just like that little bit of escapism and also that dream.
Well, I think Tim Gosling said it very eloquently here in one of our previous podcasts. He said, you know, he's been blown away with, they've got about 30,000 followers as well. And he said he's been blown away by the amount of people who are so engaged in what they're doing. The reasons are various, but, you know, for some people they're not quite at that stage in their life yet that they can do it, or, you know, they're going through it themselves or they've done it before in their lives. It does. It engages a really broad audience, and it's lovely to see the amount of engagement we're getting in heritage preservation. It's so important.
I think people really love that we're doing it now. Probably they think we're a bit mad with two young kids and a crazy life. But if we learn anything from our farm, you know, a lot of our neighbours at our farm, they're in their 50s and 60s because they lived a life in the city and then they made that choice to do that in retirement. Whereas we made that choice in our 30s and now we're reaping the benefits. So the idea with this is the same thing. We make this decision at 40. And we build the next chapter of our lives.
I have to ask, as being as someone who's very interested in interior design, do you have an advanced understanding of what you want to do with the interiors at Saltash?
We do, and because it's a hotel, there's so much more flexibility in many ways because you don't have to live in the rooms permanently. So it's really important to me that if you come and stay five times, you could potentially have five different experiences. So although the guest experience is the same, that aesthetic might be different or the interiors might be different if you stay in a different room.
Yeah.
So, of course, there'll be things that tie it all together. But we'll be playing with lots of different paint colours. Exterior where the manor red, the common heritage colour you see, is the colour of the roof. And we talked about those practical decisions you make. We don't want to replace the roof because the expense of that is just
phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
We were lucky. Ours was replaced 20 years ago with Welsh slate. So
okay, amazing.
Hallelujah to
that. Well, ours is colourbond steel, but even then we don't want to have to replace it. And so we let that colour dictate a lot of the paint choices. Mm. We're toying with it at the moment, the library at the front. I actually think we'll paint the whole thing inside in the same red. So it'll be a deep red inside and then maybe sort of like a blush upholstery in that room. And then in the reception area, I've approached this artist, Kate Pittis from Brisbane. She's going to paint, you know, like sort of, you used to see it in drawing rooms and dining rooms, how there'd be a mural on the wall. So she will paint an Australian, sounds a bit naff when you explain it, to be honest. It will be beautiful. she's going to paint that whole room.
In a mural?
A mural.
Oh, and it's not naff to me. That sounds divine.
Yeah, which will be beautiful and completely unique. Mm.
Can you share with us what sort of setting that mural will be, or is that a secret?
It's not a secret, Anne, but I just don't really know. it's a work in progress. Okay. We literally have started the process. I approached Kate. Instagram can be a wonderful thing. I approached Kate and I said, what do you think about this crazy idea I've had? And I ran it past her architect and she's like, yeah, well let's give it a go. And so it's very much a work in progress. Mm. You know, Kate will need to come and paint on site. It's going to be, she has this beautiful sort of washed out landscape style, so it'll be that. Mm. Someone from Instagram said, are you gonna add the kids and mate in there? I'm like, it's not quite the look we're going for. Then at the back of the property in the back room will be this beautiful lounge and dining area, not a restaurant, not a cafe, but just a space for guests to come together.
That's
and to
a bit
eat
more
breakfast
homely.
So it feels like a home, and that's a whole idea. Is that when you're there you can feel like you can walk into the kitchen, not have to cook a meal because there'll be someone there to do that, but just it's supposed to feel homely. It's small enough where it can feel like that. We're looking at a sort of really pale blue colour in there.
I've been using a lot of colour.
Using a lot of colour, but not bright colour, like not colour how you'd think of it. Yeah, not feature wall colour. Yeah. But, yeah, just bold choices and ceilings painted and
And I think the good thing about these old homes with the high ceilings, it can take that. Mm.
It's forgiving. Yes. I think of
and beautiful, long curtains and it'll
wallpaper.
Maybe a like a
We're
grass style
that
wallpaper that you guys have selected, that textured wallpaper, or whether we turn Kate's painting into a wallpaper and apply it that way to the wall, that'll just come down to the mechanics of doing it. But I've been slowly collecting other like vintage art, other Australian artists. I'm also trying to do a contemporary take on the art. So I found this fantastic Victorian photographer who will take some photos of the surround. I'm trying to draw the outside in a bit, like just draw the history of the town in, and getting artists to like commission it. I've just commissioned, I'm full of it, like I'm just doing million miles an hour now, but I've commissioned this great artist, Ingrid Horton, to do these beautiful portraits of faces from the town from the 1800s.
Oh, incredible.
So there's a big bush ranger history there too. So she'll do some. These are for the cabins out the back. So she'll do these kind of lovely portraits of those faces. So I think all the art needs to speak to the history or the surroundings.
I agree.
But it'll be a mix of contemporary and historic inside. But this is the fun bit we're getting to. This
is
the fun stage.
I'm right
all that.
Thick in the fun bit at the moment. And it's funny you're saying that, you know, the amazing people you discover on Instagram. I discovered through our carpet manufacturer, I'm actually creating custom carpets and rugs with designer rugs. Hello, Yossi and Maria. Love your work. It was through the connection with Yossi that he mentioned a fellow called Ken from Kingdom Home. He has his own range of wallpapers. And I reached out to him to create custom wallpapers for Heatherbrae, bringing the outdoor in. So we're quite advanced in the development of those, where we're using our Moreton Bay fig. Using local wildlife, that's being manufactured by another Australian business, Christo from Hillmore. Hi, Christo.
Which is beautiful because, yeah. I mean, looking at wallpapers,
a lot of it's European.
Yeah. I don't want to see a European landscape on a wall in the middle of country New South Wales. Yeah. It just doesn't work.
And we didn't want that. You know, I started talking to De Gorno about those beautiful hand-painted.
They're stunning,
but it jars in our home.
I agree.
Because it's, it's cherry blossom from Asia or it's, it's some sort of motif
Chinois,
from France. So we're aligned. Aligned in so many
ways.
And
we're also aligned on tapware. We will lean towards that sort of real brass that you see in much older heritage homes as opposed to a newer sort of to take on that.
Well, it's interesting that you should mention that because we're in the process of having our kitchen installed at the moment. You had a little sneak peek of it today, but I haven't showed it on Instagram yet. And the people that are coming through our walkthrough soon, they will get to see it for a first time. But, when I first started looking at putting all of the, the joinery and the tapware and everything in that room, I was thought, well, I put cornices into a space that was utility, that was part of the staff area of the home. Would I, amp up things like the tapware and et cetera, but where I landed was I need to be respectful to the space and the history of the home. And so we've gone with those utility choices like very simple tapware in brass, which would have been what was used at the time.
And it's a similar story with the garden. We have a beautiful landscape architect, Beck, from Studio UC. At the front of the property, there is a beautiful heritage garden that's been there for many, many years. So she's walked through there. She's seen which plants are already there. She's restored the existing garden beds to make sure that pays tribute to that. But then at the back of the property where we're building building these cabins, it'll be a slightly more native-based garden, slightly more in keeping with the Australian bush. So we'll have those two elements as well, sort of respecting the history of the town and just adding our touch.
Lovely. I could get it. Gosh, we could talk all
day. I know, that's a whole other podcast on
gardens. Oh, thank you so much, Edwina. It's been such a lovely day getting to know you and to talk about all things we're passionate about.
And a big thanks to our special guest, Edwina Bartholomew, reporter, presenter, and an extraordinary working mum, and together with husband Neil, now the team behind the restoration and reimagination of Saltash Farm.